All right. Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, all. Welcome to the RPM sub-team for trademark claims data review call on Thursday, the 2nd of May, 2019. In the interest of time, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken by the Zoom room. If you're only on the audio bridge at this time, could you please let yourself be known now? Okay, hearing no names, I would like to remind all to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. And with this, I will turn it over to Ariel Liang. You can begin, Ariel.
Thanks very much, Julie. This is Ariel for the record. So welcome everyone to the trademark claims sub-team meeting today. For the agenda, we have four items. First is a review agenda updates to SOIs. Second is the overview of updated timeline and work plan. And then third is continuing developing the preliminary recommendations. So that includes two sub-items. One is to conclude the discussion on claims Q1 in conjunction with the review of proposal number 6. And second sub-item is beginning discussion of the claims question 4. And then that's the end, now takes us to AOB. Anyone has any comments or questions about the agenda today? And now seeing hands or comments, so staff will take you to the second item, which is the overview of the updated timeline and work plan. And I just pulled the table that we sent to the sub-team on the screen, and I'm also going to put this document in the chat. I just dropped the document in the chat so you can download it yourself if you'd like to scroll through. So just to give you a quick update on this timeline, so basically it's structured in the way that we want to show exactly week by week what are the expected scope of work by the sub-team, and then also reflect in real time the actual work completed. And you can see there are three tables. The first table is basically the individual proposals that the sub-team is tasked to review. Second table is the charter questions that the sub-team needs to answer and also develop draft recommendations for. And then the third table is the consolidated table that shows on a weekly basis what needs to be done and what work actually has been completed. And so you can see that based on the work plan from this week's meeting till mid-June, that's what we projected, the work will be completed for the claim sub-team. And there are just some remaining charter questions and a couple of individual proposals left. And the pace we're anticipating is for two meetings, the sub-team will complete one charter question and in conjunction with the individual proposal that's related to the charter question. So that's the anticipated pace that's reflected in the intended scope of work column in the table. But of course, if the sub-team is doing faster than what is anticipated, we will keep track of that in the third column, which is the actual work completed that you see it. And then once an individual proposal has been reviewed completely by the sub-team, we will put the date in the third column of the actual completion date for table A. And once a charter question has been completed, which means there's answers developed and there are recommendations developed if needed, then we'll also track that completion date in a table. So it's structured in that manner. So just to wrap up on this timeline overview for the sub-team, there are actually basically two charter questions left. It's question 4 and question 5. And then there are two individual proposals left, which is proposal number 6 and number 11. So that's the remaining scope of work. And based on our prediction, the work should be done before ICANN 65 the latest, and hopefully this will be done earlier. So that's just a quick overview of this timeline. And I'm not sure whether Mary, you have any additional input. I see actually Mary does. So Mary, please go ahead.
Thanks very much, Ariel. Hi, everyone. It's Mary from staff. And as you've noticed in Zoom, when staff is hosting, we can't actually put up our hands, so we have to communicate in other ways. But so as Ariel said, hopefully this gives you a sense of where the sub-team is right now, as well as the intended completion date, which looks to be within target. So the only other thing I'll add is that following the staff discussions with the various sub-team co-chairs, obviously towards the end of this process, we will be helping to extract whatever draft recommendations this sub-team agrees on, similarly with Sunrise, into a table or document that so that towards the end or at the end of this process, you can see exactly what is the recommendation or what are the recommendations, if any, that this sub-team will be providing to the full working group. And hopefully there will be time during the Marrakesh sessions to begin that review. So that's kind of where we're aiming to go in June. Thanks, Ariel.
Thanks very much, Mary. This is Ariel. We'll pause for just a moment and see if there's any other questions, comments from the sub-team on the timeline. And not seeing comments or hand raised, I guess that we can go on to the third item on the agenda, which is the development of the preliminary recommendations, including Q1, Proposal 6, and then Q4. So I will turn over the floor to Roger, who will be chairing the meeting today. Thank you.
Hi, this is Roger. Thanks, Ariel. I just wanted to start with a question that Julie has asked a couple of times in chat, and I'm not sure if anybody's seen it, but we have one phone number or two phone numbers now that have called in. If you'd like to identify yourself so we know when we're speaking to you, who we are speaking to.
This is Michael Graham. I think one of them may be mine. It's a 4330 number.
Okay, thanks, Michael. And then there's a 6759 number. Oh, thank you, Rebecca. All right. Well, let's jump in. I think we ended the call on proposal number 6 last week. We just introduced it, and we actually, I said a few things from a registrar standpoint, not a co-chair standpoint. But let's go ahead and jump into that. And since Michael and Rebecca, I'm not sure if they can see, I'll go ahead and read it once again, and then we can jump into the discussion. The recommendation is, if the claims notices are retained, then ICANN shall provide open source software in the top 5 programming languages used by registrars to assist in the integration of the TM claims notice with registrar systems. And I'll recap for those that weren't on the call last week. My input from a registrar standpoint was, I don't see us as GoDaddy using this. It would just take actually more work to integrate it into anything that we've already built. But I'll leave that up to other registrars that are interested in speaking or anyone else that has input on this proposal. Please go ahead. Okay, no one has any comments. There was a hand. Cynthia, please go ahead.
Hi, this is Cynthia King. I think that during our discussion last week, most of us came to the conclusion that this would not be appropriate for ICANN, not only because you know, at this point, we don't even know whether any of the registrars want this. We haven't asked that question. But because, you know, having ICANN begin to provide software, not only do they have to provide the software, but then the person receiving the software has to want it. And then there has to be an integration between what we're providing and what the party currently has. It's just, it would be a mess. It would be expensive. And I think that unless the registrars really, really want it, which they've never expressed, it just doesn't seem to make any sense to me. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Cynthia. I see Ariel has her hand up. Please, Ariel, go ahead.
Thanks very much, Roger. This is Ariel. Just an update from staff side, we're also following up with compliance to ask the question of whether they have already provided any technical assistance or guidance to the registrars and to help them implement the claims notice. And so we already asked that question. And then also we asked another question is whether they keep track whether any registrars are not implementing the claims notice, because the proposal, if you look at the rationale, I think what the proponent said is some registrars have not implemented the TM claims notice due to the cost. So we want to verify whether compliance actually tracked that, and if so, what's the scope of the issue or problem with that. And then once we receive the response from compliance, we can share that with the sub-team.
Great. Thanks, Ariel. Kathy, you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Can you hear me? I think Susan was first.
Oh, well, we'll let Susan go if she's ready.
Susan's? Yes. Hi. Hopefully you can hear me. I put my hand up because there was a sort of a lull and no one was speaking. I was going to say something very similar to Cynthia, really. So just, you know, things that I raised really briefly at the end of last week's call, just around, you know, do we have any kind of visibility on whether registrars would even use this if it were provided to them, leaving aside whether it would be appropriate. I do know, you know, some registrars chose not to run the claims process, you know, not to sign on to sell names during the Sunrise and claims period, but, you know, there may be a number of factors in that, including things like what their client base is and whether they were likely to get enough trademark owner clients to make it worth their while building out. So I'm sort of cautious about us suggesting that ICANN spends money and time in developing something unless we genuinely feel that this is going to serve a need and fix a problem.
Great. Okay. Thanks, Susan. All right. And I think Kathy is agreeing, so she took her hand down.
No, I didn't take my hand down.
Oh, okay, sorry.
Okay, so this is Kathy. And so a question for you, Roger, with your technical hat on, please, and also for staff, and then a suggestion. So I'll just kind of throw it all out there. One is, does ICANN provide any other types of software? Two, which is a question to you, Roger, does ICANN, you know, is there any kind of software library for registrars on anything, you know. A question to ICANN, to Ariel for ICANN staff, could we expand our question from is ICANN org writ large currently providing TMCH or trademark claim software to registrars to, does ICANN provide any software to registries and registrars? Is this something that might be added to a library? So variation of the question to Roger. And to everyone, do we just want to table this until we get the answers to the questions that Ariel said last week that were going out to ICANN, so that we just have some basis for information about whether ICANN provides software? Thanks, back to you, Roger.
Thanks, Kathy. From my standpoint, we don't use anything. I can't say that ICANN doesn't provide it, I don't know. We have never integrated anything if they did provide it. And I know that staff was going to research that. So, but yes, we don't use it. And with my technical hat on, looking at this proposal, it's fairly broad in that I'm not even sure where or how ICANN would start this. I mean, there's a long process in the claims notice. So I see that it's, I don't know, it would take a lot of work that I'm not sure would get used. But again, that's just my technical hat. So, all right, Christine, you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks. This is Christine Doreen. So I wanted to piggyback a little bit on what you said there, Roger, and respond a little bit to Kathy also. So not only, I mean, when you talk about a big registrar telling you that's a big technical infrastructure and a lot of work, I mean, it is for starters. And the main reason why the smaller registrars don't implement claims is because they don't really have the technical ability to sort of build out whatever it is or the resources. Maybe they just don't have a developer on hand to build out whatever that resource is. They've done the cost benefit analysis and it's just not worth it to them, whatever it is. The solution of providing software in open source is unlikely to make it any better because the registrars would still have to implement this technical solution. I don't think the integration with the Trademark Clearinghouse is so exceedingly burdensome that it can't be done. It's just that it's a hurdle, right? I don't think providing the same information via open source, some sort of an open source plugin, would provide less of a hurdle to most of the registrars we're talking about here. So I do support tabling it a little bit, but I don't think this proposal offers an actual fix to the problem. Thanks.
Thanks, Christine. And I would agree with you, taking my co-chair hat off, I would agree with you. I just don't see that this lowers the hurdle for anyone to get into it. But again, I understand why it was brought up. So, if staff could answer some of those, and I see Mary has her hand up, if Mary would like to interject now.
Thanks, Roger. It's Mary from staff. And as Ariel said, we are following up internally with those of our colleagues who will have more details than those of us on the policy staff. In order to assist them, I think what we're trying to do on our end here on the policy side is try to understand the specific problem as well as the breadth of the proposal. For example, in terms of ICANN providing software or ICANN providing even, you know, whether open source or any other kind or any kind of technical assistance. And I think this goes to Kathy's question that we'll follow up as well. Quite aside from any potential slippery slope arguments, I think this just seems like a very broad proposal. So unless we can understand what the specific problem is, as well as perhaps the scope and nature of the kind of technical assistance as being requested, it might be something that's going to be difficult for ORC to provide more than let you know what we do at the moment. And to Kathy's question, we can follow up internally. We have not been given a timeline as to when they can come back to us.
Okay, great. Thanks, Mary. All right, moving on. Cynthia, you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. Just one other point, and maybe it's something that we should be asking at the same time we're reaching out to the other departments, is would this bring liability to ICANN if the software that, you know, that they're providing didn't work correctly with whoever's implementing it, or if it's still allowed, you know, registered trademarks and things to get through? Do you know what I'm saying? If there's a liability, I think that will also play into whether or not this is something that we would even consider venturing into. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Cynthia. Christine, you have your hand up. Is that an old hand? Thank you.
Yes, I'm new. Sorry.
No problem. Everyone's new on this. So, okay. I think that we can close this up and staff can get back to us with some of the answers from their side. It seems like general agreement that this seems to maybe not work out well, but let's go ahead and table this for staff to get back to us on it. Does anyone else have any comments or questions? Okay, I think we will table this and jump to question 4. Uh, All right, question four. Somewhat simple, two sentence question that leads into I don't even know how many parts here, quite a few parts. So I'll go ahead and read the question and we'll get on to the first subsection. So the question is the exact match requirement for the trademark claim serving the intended purposes of the trademark claims RPM? In conducting this analysis, recall that IDNs and Latin-based words with accents and umlauts are currently not serviced or recognized by many registries. So subsection A is what is the evidence of harm under the existing system? So I'll open that up and we can start with A. Or actually, if you want to answer the question in whole of the first line. Griffin has his hand up. I didn't see it come up. Griffin, please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks, Roger. This is Griffin Barnett for the record.
Yep. Oh, yeah,
I'll take a stab quickly at just kind of giving a quick response to part A, I suppose. I think there was some data that we saw. I'm just trying to switch back and forth between documents. My thought is that, you know, the harm of having exact matches only for claims is that registrations that are still confusingly similar and might still be sort of actionable under trademark laws or, you know, dispute resolution mechanisms like the UDRP or URS. Currently, those types of domains are not subject to the notices, and there's no possible deterrent effect against such registrations, potentially preventing, you know, non-exact match, but still confusingly similar matches. And again, this kind of leads to a greater curative mechanisms burden on rights owners than there might otherwise be. And at the same time, there's also kind of an equal harm on prospective registrants because they're only made aware or notified of exact matches when in fact their non-exact matches may be equally as actionable. So that's sort of kind of what I would suggest are sort of the harms, so to speak, of limiting notices just to exact matches. Now, at the same time, I understand that, you know, you might say, well, you know, I'll leave my comments there for now. Again, the gist of the point is there are plenty of non-exact matches that would still kind of fit into a likelihood of confusion or trademark infringement analysis or a bad faith analysis. And I think limiting notice, the notice mechanism in particular to just exact matches doesn't kind of give kind of a full view on that type of analysis, which would be applicable here. Thanks.
Thanks, Griffin. The one thing that I'll bring up, and I'm not sure if I have this down right or not, and someone can correct me, is I was thinking that in the database, trademark holders can actually identify 50 other, and I don't know what that requirement is. I'm not real familiar with it. I was thinking there was up to 50 others related trademarks or something similar to that they could identify with it that would get triggered at the same time. But again, I don't know those rules real exact. So if someone can bring that up, that'd be great. Christine, you had your hand up. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks. This is Christine Durain. I'll answer your question, and then I'll go to my point.
Perfect. Thank you.
So the Marks Plus 50 is, in the Trademark Clearinghouse, a brand owner who's prevailed on a UDRP for some of these confusingly similar terms can submit those terms along with the evidence of the UDRP itself into sort of this Trademarks Plus 50 because it's been shown that it's an abused string. So, and then that a panel has already found that those strings are confusing. Likely, there's a likelihood of confusion. So that's been adjudicated. It hasn't just been randomly come up with by the brand owner. And Griffin put in the chat UDRP or court case. And yes, correct. Thanks, Griffin. You're right. So it's I think it's a good mechanism. I think we determined based on our, you know, obviously limited data gathering, I think we've determined that it was not a much used feature of the TMCH, but perhaps, you know, now that people have had a full round of this, maybe people would use that a little bit more. I'm not sure. But to go to my point, I just wanted to note that, and I don't disagree with anything Griffin said. I think they're, you know, clearly confusingly similar is a problem. However, one of the things you get with Trademark Plus 50 is you get terms that have been adjudicated to have been a problem already. Whereas if you just have, you know, whatever term the brand owner can think of, I think you end up, you know, there's a lot of possibility for capturing, you know, other sort of related terms that would be permissible in unique circumstances or whatever. And I think when it gets to a technical implementation, it gets even more tricky. So if you can imagine as a registrant, you know, the customer here getting a claims notice that says, hey, you wanted to register, you know, whatever string you wanted, and that's available, but it's kind of similar to this brand owner's term. And so you need to know that and hear some information about the brand owner. And, you know, I'm not sure how much information we would be able to provide in a form claims notice. So some cases it would be the addition of terms. Some times it would be the addition or the transposition of letters. In some cases the words might be a misspelling or a substitution of a vowel or something. I'm worried that the claims notice wouldn't be precise enough to give the registrant a sort of sense as to what's wrong with its name choice. And so while I respect the concern and I think it's a problem, I think that this is a very kind of broad hammer for kind of a pinpointed problem. And I think it's going to be a bit of a concern. Sorry for taking so much time. Thanks.
No, great. Thanks, Christine. That helped out a lot. I don't know. Michael had a couple comments and I'll read them that he posted in chat. His first comment was most domain names that we have issue with are Match Plus some other elements, very few exact matches, and notifying applicants of possible issues would permit them to consider continuing or not. And I thought he had another comment that I could read. Michael said, problem with 50 plus is that very few litigated domain names reappear. All right, I think that was everyone. Greg, you have your hand up, please go ahead.
Yeah, Greg Chatton for the record, you know, pretty much in line with what's been said already. I think that the idea of being able to align this with things that are Match Plus, and the plus is not just anything that we'd be looking for. I'm thinking more specifically that there's usually either some sort of a term that relates to the product or service, or there's, you know, an Inc. or a corporate LLC or a GmbH. And so if my client is Hassan Pfeffer, you know, I'd also want to be able to, if I could, to get claims for Hassan Pfeffer Stew or Hassan Pfeffer Rabbits or Hassan Pfeffer Inc., but not for Hassan Pfeffer Computers, because Hassan Pfeffer doesn't make computers.
Okay. Great. Thanks, Greg. Kathy, you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Roger. So this is Kathy, and I'm going to try to move. I've got two computers open so that I can try to quote from one and look at the other if I don't have two screens anymore. So I just wanted to read some of the data we collected and also that the analysis group collected. And this is a long way, I think, for agreeing with Christine that we probably got this right the first time. So this is our trademark claims. This is a summary of discussions and individual comments. It's the middle column. The exact match requirement for trademark claims seems to serve the intended purpose of the trademark claims RPM, as the exact match registrations account for a disproportionately large share of registrations. Who is data found by the analysis group? I'm not quite sure what that means. But we did find And so I just want to cite also to the harms that we remember that from the registrants as well, that even exact matches were causing conflicts in terms of fair use and free expression. So we have that under the existing under the existing terms. So I wanted, and now I'm at the analysis group's final report. This is the revised report. But going all the way back to what the GAC asked them to do, it included an expansion to, the GAC wanted to, the analysis group to examine whether an expansion of the matching criteria could be implemented. And so analysis group says initial responses had trademark owners and expressing interest in expanding. However, and I quote, registries and registrars expressed some concern regarding the costs associated with implementing additional matching criteria. And so, and then when you get to the analysis groups, if anybody's trying to follow me, that was, I think, page 25. So now when you get to the top of page 28 of their report, results. We find no clear evidence that expanding the matching criteria will outweigh the potential costs of doing so. Registration activity by trademark holders and third-party registrants is disproportionately centered around exact matches of trademark strings rather than variations of trademark strings. Additionally, our results indicate that trademark owners file very few disputes using the URS or UDRP. If they so the sense that they could use the URS and UDRP on these variations, and not doing that. So I think our data kind of indicates we may have that expanding it might would create more problems in itself. Thanks.
Thanks, Kathy. Michael had a couple of questions to you. I don't know if you answered them or not. Maybe Michael can chat that in there to you about what you were reading. So Michael, if she didn't answer that, please let us know. Rebecca, you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Rebecca Toshnet, can you confirm that you can hear me? Because I've been going in and out.
I hear you perfect. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. So I wanted to agree with what Kathy said and some others have said. We haven't gotten the notice working yet. We should not make it more complicated and confusing before having any confidence that it's been improved. I would also point out that likely confusion is not the right standard to be applied here. Claims was supposed to be for the things that were most likely to cause problems, the worst of the worst or the most likely. And the chance of catching real problems goes way down and the false positives go way up when you start to expand. And I just want to point out, based on the analysis group data, we know who's going to get notices under an expanded match system. Marriott Hotels will get a match because there's a hotel in there. Amazon Cloud will get a match because there's a cloud in there. Christmas in July will get a match because there's a Christmas in there. And those are in the TMCH. And in fact, those are cloud and hotel and the like are the most popular results. That's going to get worse. And that interacts with Susan's excellent point about making the notice worse. So at the very least, we got to fix the notice before we can say that more people ought to get warned. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Rebecca. Phil, you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. Phil, for the record, I'll speak in a personal capacity so I don't have to figure out what's in my co-chair role and what's in a personal role. And you should be able to hear me better now. I was on speaker. Let me say, personally, I'm not well, there's a couple of considerations here. And one, before I forget it, I'm not sure that Rebecca's description was right, that if Marriott registered Marriott.hotels, that every attempted registration with the term hotel in it would be, my conception would have to be an exact match to the trademark plus goods and services. But, you know, the virtue of the current system is that it aligns 100% with existing legal rights, either the exact trademark or an exact match of a variation of the mark that was recovered in a court case or a UDRP or URS. That said, you know, the problem here is to talk generally about this without a specific proposal on the table is very difficult. If we were talking about a very narrow proposal like, you know, Marriott was registering Marriott, and they said, well, also we've recovered a bunch of domains that were Marriott Hotel or Marriott Hotels, and we'd like to include those. It's a goods and services. That's a fairly narrow expansion and is based on actual real world experience with infringement. If we're talking about something where every possible fat finger typo of a domain of a trademark was included, and also missing digits or added numbers or an added S at the end, the chance of false positives goes way up. So I think we need to be looking at a specific proposal or proposals, if there are any, for expansion. And then we need to consider, does it accord to real world experience? How many false positives would it be expected to generate? And really, a key thing that hasn't been discussed yet is it technically implementable by the trademark clearinghouse? I think the clearinghouse is going to have to be the one to provide the master list to the registrars of the trademark plus all the related terms, if there's any expansion, so they can generate the notices accurately. So we have to be in touch with Deloitte and say, hey, there's a proposal here that we're looking at sympathetically. From a technical viewpoint, can you implement it? There's no point expanding this if they can't handle it. So I'll reserve further thoughts for specific proposals. I'm not against any potential expansion, speaking personally, but I would want to be to know how many false positives could be expected, whether it accords to real-world experience with infringement, and whether it's technically implementable by Deloitte so they can provide a comprehensive list to the registrars. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Phil. Susan, you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks. And just to respond briefly on something that Phil has just raised first, I agree that clearly we have to have something that's technically implementable, and so, you know, speaking to the trademark clearinghouse is obviously relevant. But it does seem to me that certainly in some regards, an expanded matching is clearly technically implementable, because the trademark plus 50 concept exists. And therefore, Deloitte are already able to address sending claims notices that go wider than just the exact match to the trademark. And so it seems to me that for sure this is implementable. So you also commented on the difficulty of talking about this without a specific proposal. And of course, we aren't just, you know, limiting ourselves to discussing the individual proposals that some people had put forward. I mean, the whole point of this subteam is to be looking at the data that we've got, to the extent that we've got any, and also considering our own experiences in using the system and trying to answer these questions and considering, you know, the possibility as we go further down the list of questions on question four for the different types. I mean, I think because we've started on A without looking further down the list, there's actually a series of questions that talk about, you know, for each individual type of possible expanded match, you know, what are the kind of, you know, what are the pros and cons effectively? And so to talk about this in just very headline terms about expanding the matching allows for people to get into a conversation about how complex it is and what a complicated algorithm there is, whereas in fact there may be some forms of match plus that are not complex at all, and where the balance is on one side of the line or the other, and there may be others where maybe the balance is on the other side of the line. And perhaps what we really need to do is try to talk about the different types of variants one by one, rather than kind of lumping them all in together, because that leads to kind of confusion. Finally, the reason I originally put my hand up was just to reference back to the analysis group report. And I recognize that this is, you know, some of the data that we have. But there are some significant flaws with the analysis group report, and not all of, you know, not necessarily their fault, but, you know, in terms of this matching, for example, they made it very clear that it was incredibly difficult for them to make any assessment of the matching. There were various forms of matching that we all think would have been extremely beneficial to be included in their assessment, and they didn't do it because they said they couldn't. And so the idea of matches that involved in sort of industry keywords related to the trademark, for example, were not something that they even looked at. So there's sort of then conclusions around, you know, the cost of implementing some kind of expanded matching would be, you know, far in excess of the benefit, you know, isn't looking at actually a full range of scenarios. It's not looking at the type of matching that some of us are talking about here. You know, and they actually made no cost benefit analysis at all. So for them to then make conclusions about cost, to me is fundamentally flawed. And so I understand that we have that report, but we have to exercise real caution in following any of the conclusions from that group. And indeed, they referenced frequently in their report that it shouldn't be used for policy development, because they recognize the limitations of the work that they've done.
Great. Thanks, Susan. I'd just like to follow up, you know, take off my co-chair and put my technical hat on with what something Susan brought up. The 50 plus is still technically a exact match. You know, it may be exact match on 10 different things, but it's still an exact match where the resourcing power for, say, a wildcard is different than a simple lookup to 50 different things. So it just, again, technical hat, not a co-chair or anything, just to add some input to that. Kathy, you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
The fun of unmuting. Okay, it takes a while. So I'm going to agree with what I think Susan said at the beginning, which is that we should probably go farther down the list. Also that, yeah, I think the analysis group spent a lot of time, I just put it in chat so I won't repeat it, a lot of time on this issue, and did not limit their conclusions. It was for policymaking purposes. But also that I don't see anybody busting down the door of the URS on this one, which I'd expect to see if there was a huge problem. So the URS seems to serve this kind of overflow issue of non-exact matches, which have such huge and enormous implications for free expression and fair use, and also for trademarks. And so we have that medium for them to go to rapidly, quickly, cheaply, and it's worth just not busting down on that. So thanks. I think we should go on to other questions.
Great, thanks, Kathy. And yes, and as I sat here, and many of you brought it up, we're answering several of these questions later on, or we're touching on them. I'm not sure we're answering them or not, but we're at least including them. So I think that, you know, looking at some of the other questions, you know, A was, you know, is there harm? And maybe we heard some of that. And B was, should it be expanded? And then B has four subparts to that. C was, you know, how feasible is expanding it? And D is, if it's expanded, what actually has to happen as well? And there's a couple parts to that. I think that, again, as people talked, you know, you could see pieces of these getting pulled in and tried to be answered. So I think that, I don't know if we need to do anything specific and ask one specific question, or if we can just go ahead and talk about this as a whole. I'll leave that up for the group. If they want to try to answer one thing specific, I don't know if you can or not, but I'll leave, we'll open it up to the floor to discuss any of the A, B, C, or D. And I think that was it, was the three, four pieces. Kathy, your hand's up. Is that an old hand?
That is an old hand.
Thank you. So I open it up, and if anybody wants to speak to anything else, maybe that helps answer some of the other questions. Again, I think we touched on some of them, but is there harm? Should it be expanded? What's the feasibility? And if so, what needs to happen? So I'll open that up and let anybody provide comments. Cynthia, your hand's up. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. This is Cynthia. I just wanted to say that, we go around and around here kind of looking at the detail of the issues because that's what our job is, right? But the other side of this coin is that what we need to think about is what is going to benefit the consumers, the average Joe who's out there just to register a domain. I do think that it would be helpful for the average Joes to know if they could be getting into a place where they're, where a letter or two could cause them pain if they register a domain name and then someone says, well, that's a typo, a variant. But I do also, I do also want to be mindful of the fact that we do want for people to register domain names that they can use. So it seems like what we probably need to do is to consider, maybe not, making any decisions today, but to consider how best to limit it. I kind of agree that this is a situation where we don't have an actual proposal, so we're considering concepts. And the concept should be, how do we appropriately notify these folks that there's a potential problem without, just burning down the house and telling everybody, go home, you can't have a domain name. So maybe it will take a little bit more consideration and a fine tuning of the proposal before we can actually make a good decision here. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Cynthia. Griffin, you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks, Roger. This is Griffin Burnett. I typed some additional comments in chat, but and this kind of speaks again to what Cynthia was just saying, but I wanted to just kind of reiterate them as well. But yeah, I think going to Cynthia's point, there's a couple of things, to kind of keep in mind, which is one, I still think going to kind of the original point that I made earlier, that it's better all around to provide sort of broader notice. And again, we're really just talking about notice here than to kind of push, all these variant issues, as others have suggested, to kind of being dealt with the various curative mechanisms that may be available. And again, we're not just talking about notice to prospective registrants, but we're also talking about notifying the TM owners themselves when a registration is made. And currently, they may not even be aware of a universe of non-exact matches that have been registered to even consider taking curative action because the matching rules are just limited to exact matching. So just a couple of other points that I wanted to kind of underscore. Thanks.
Thanks, Griffin. Cynthia, your hand's up. Is that an old hand? Thank you. Rebecca, your hand is up. Please go ahead.
Rebecca Tushnet. To the point that it's just noticed, I will just say again, the notice isn't working. Expanding it while it's still not working is not a great idea. And in fact, getting notice to the trademark owners is also going to be a problem. There's a very clear trade-off in the data, and I've referred in the chat to the URS coding, and I actually recommend it to anyone if you want to look at the things that cause URS cases. So it is nice to say that, well, perhaps we could do a subset and, Marriott could register hotels and lodging and, but that's not how this tends to work with the non-exact matches. So you could target, and then you would have a whole bunch of stuff that wasn't covered, or you could cover everything and get a zillion bad matches. There isn't a magic solution, and pretending that there is not going to be particularly helpful. And by the way, if we do it broad so that everybody who might potentially want to think about it gets a notice, Marriott will get 5,000 notices a day, which is not a great thing for Marriott either. So I think actually there's an undercount of the cost to the trademark owner here if you expand the match and get a bunch of false positives. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Rebecca. All right, so we are coming up on our time here. Ariel mentioned that Michael had a comment in the chat. I didn't see that. If Michael wants to mention it or if Ariel can read that.
This is Ariel. It's actually a comment earlier in the chat. Maybe I'll just read it quickly. The evidence of harm for my company and others based on the conversations with in-house IP counsel is that most of our enforcement in the domain name space is for either type of squats or exact plus trademark domain name applications. This harms both us and applicants. Agree that a well-crafted informal notice is better than forcing applicants and trademark owners to take adverse, a curative action. So that's the comment.
Okay, thanks, Ariel. All right, with just a couple minutes left, I think we'll continue this discussion next week. And I'm not sure what progress we can make. I guess I'll kind of just throw this out there. Do we need to have a specific, because this is brought up multiple times, I guess, do we need to have a specific proposal to answer this question? Do people think that? Or is this a question that we can answer or take forward without a specific proposal? Julie, you have your hand up. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you very much, Roger. And this is Julie Hedlund from staff. One thing staff could suggest is that we open up a discussion thread on question four, and that would give people an opportunity if someone had a proposal that they thought might be helpful to be able to suggest on that thread. And just a reminder to all that we do have several threads open, and we don't have any comments at this time, so we'll just ask you, and we will send a reminder, but ask you to pay attention to those threads, and please do comment if you have comments that you would like to have included.
Great. Thanks, Julie, and I see several people thinking the same way, and that we can take this to the list, and I think that's a great idea to start the thread on question four out on the list. Since we are running out of time, I will turn this back over to staff to close us out. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Roger. This is Julie Hedlund from staff, and I do apologize. I've gotten kicked out of the Zoom room, so I can't see if people are talking or raising their hands, but we are at 5 minutes to the top of the hour when we would close the call to allow transition to the next meeting. And thank you all, and we will resume our meeting next week on the usual day at the same time. Thank you all. And thank you very much for chairing, Roger. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, everybody.
All right, today's meeting's adjourned. Everyone can disconnect your lines. I'm going to close out the Zoom room so that we can start fresh for the next call. Thank you so much.